Welcome to the Daily Wrap-Up, a concise show dedicated to bringing you the most relevant independent news as we see it from the last 24 hours.
Thank you for joining me this January 15th, 2019. I'd like to begin today by touching on something in regard to Syria that I think is very important. And it has to do, again, with rhetoric versus actions and what we continue to see happening in Syria. I've been seeing a lot of people continue to claim that, now it's beginning to happen. Oh, now it's beginning to take place. They're going to pull out. It's going to happen. Now, there's two things to talk about this. One, that it doesn't seem like it's actually happening. And even if it does happen, the discussion has been morphed into the idea that these 2,000 troops now somehow represent the entirety of our involvement in Syria, or rather the U.S. oligarchy's involvement in Syria. And that is how the discussion gets manipulated. That's how they sidestep you into a specific political discussion point and get you talking about that and debating about that while the real discussion's happening all around you. Now, to start today, I want to show something that was recently pointed out to me, which was a tweet that was put out by Donald Trump, which reads, "Starting the long overdue pullout from Syria while hitting the little remaining ISIS territorial caliphate hard," which I thought they were defeated, but apparently they're still there, "and from many directions." Many directions. That's important. "Now, we'll attack again from existing nearby bases if it reforms." Meaning all the bases, such as the ones they've established on the border of Iraq and Syria and all, basically every single country surrounding Syria, basically saying, well, if we decide to, we're going to come right back in. And goes on to say, "We'll devastate Turkey economically if they hit Kurds, create 20-mile safe zone." Now, credit where credit is due. I saw this was shared with me from a tweet posted by Sammy Ramadanian, and says, "So let's fully understand U.S. policy in Syria and Middle East. Withdraw from Syria, keep forces in Syria to attack ISIS," which it will do, and is, again, I'll get to this in a moment. "Now, attack Syria from bases nearby, create 20-mile zone in Syria, defend Kurds in Syria, devastate Turkey. Summary, bigger U.S.-led wars of aggression." Now, this is a very lucid, logical way to look at what this person, or what Donald Trump is saying. Despite the fact that all his supporters will read is starting the overdue pullout. Hooray, end of Syria, everything's coming to an end. Except that's not at all what's actually happening. And this is what we have to continue to think about. The manipulation of what we're actually looking at. Now, this has become a discussion about just these 2,000 troops. That's what this has been manipulated into. They have made it seem as if whether or not they leave, these 2,000 troops will ultimately decide if this illegal invasion is officially over or not. That is an intentional deception. Even if these 2,000 troops leave, most of them actually likely going to Iraq, as Bolton promised to Israel and Trump himself has said, this war is far from over. Proxies, mercenaries, military contractors, other NATO allies, etc., even still fighting from the border, again, as Trump just said in his comment. But if these troops leave, it is definitely a step in the right direction, and that's worthy of praise. But I take great issue with the fact that this is now being represented as if it's the end of the war if these 2,000 troops leave, which it's absolutely not. This is something we can continue to point out. Discussing continued efforts to work with Turkey within Syria and on and on and on. This is not going to end in any way, shape, or form. And he made that very clear again in his tweet that he put out, that they will go back if necessary. They're going to continue to attack ISIS. Then again, this fails to discuss all of the other troops, as I pointed out recently in regard to Abby Martin, she pointed out, and I've said many times, there's at least 5,500 mercenaries being paid and funded by the United States, we're talking military contractors, working, usually most of these are ex-US soldiers, in Syria. They're not going anywhere. And again, as I pointed out numerous times, they've promised Israel that they're going to continue to do this. And they've even said point blank that they have ways of maintaining this effort from, regardless of whether they're still stationed there, which they're going to be either way. Now, again, this is Donald Trump saying himself that these troops are going to leave, which I still am waiting to see happen. But even when that happens, the war is not coming to an end. This is going to continue to move forward because there's a large agenda taking place that involves Israel, that involves Saudi Arabia, that involves all of this little triad of evil that's going on today that has nothing to do with what's best for Americans coming from the American side, the U.S. oligarchy leading this charge. There's a problem there. And we need to recognize, again, action versus rhetoric. Now, before I move on to the next article, I want to point out again that I had an excellent, or for the first time on the show, an excellent interview yesterday with Adam Green from No More News. I really enjoyed being on his show. We had a lot of interesting things to talk about. I've included the link in the show notes for you to check out. We did kind of a quick fire discussion of a lot of different political points and a lot of things going on in the Middle East. So I recommend you check that out. I really enjoyed that show, and hopefully we'll be able to do it again in the near future. But let's get on to some other discussion, and this all directly relates to what's going on in the Middle East and you know, the joint U.S.-Israel foreign policy, it would seem. But this is in regard to Syria specifically. And this is a point that we've brought up numerous times. And point the fact that Israel has continued to deny until this point, again, showing you that they have utterly lied until it's come out otherwise. And now this is coming from Zero Hedge, a very important article entitled, Israel's top commander finally spills secrets of, quote, invisible war in Syria. Now, this is something I actually briefly touched on the other day in regard to the admission of thousands of attacks in Syria. But so let's elaborate on this, because this is a very important thing for people to understand. So for years, Israel denied allegations that it had a role in funding and weaponizing the anti-Assad insurgency in Syria. And in recent years, military officials responded, you know, no comment, even when confronted with overwhelming evidence of Israeli weapons documented in al-Qaeda-linked insurgents' hands. As U.S. weapons as well, but this is relating specifically to Israel. But this all changed in a new British Sunday Times interview with outgoing Israeli Army Commander Gadi Eisenkot, who has finally confirmed the Israeli Defense Forces, the IDF, supplied weapons to rebels across the border for, quote, self-defense, and further, perhaps more stunningly, has admitted to long waging an invisible war in Syria that involved, quote, thousands of attacks. Now, this is a big deal. Now, he says, quote, in the Sunday Times, we carried out thousands of attacks in recent years without taking responsibility and without asking for credit. Now, this in and of itself shows you an obvious trail of unprovoked attacks in Syria from Israel, something that many people pretend is fake news, and he just outright admitted it. Now, the interview constitutes the first time that any current top Israeli military or government official has fully acknowledged sending anything beyond, you know, humanitarian supplies, such as medical aid, to Syrian militants seeking to topple the Assad government. And yet it still appears the country's military chief is slow playing the confirmation, only acknowledging the IDF provided, you know, light weapons. So now it's gone from, you know, medical treatment to just, oh, only light weapons, even though that in of itself is an acknowledgement of a lie. And even years after years of reporting, has definitively uncovered an expansive Israeli program to arm dozens of insurgent groups and pay their salaries, mind you, including known affiliates of al-Qaeda in Syria. Now, in recent years, multiple current and former Israeli defense officials have gone so far as to say that ISIS is ultimately preferable to Iran and Assad. Something I've even seen some U.S. commentators say, U.S. politicians as well, kind of hint at the fact that maybe we should work with them to fight Assad in Iran, showing you their hand. The one that the U.S. is directly involved with the creation and funding and arming and supporting of ISIS and al-Qaeda, but that they would side with them over the groups they're trying to fight, and their real agenda is focused on Iran, which is Israel's foreign policy. Now, the author ends by saying, what is clear and now finally settled for the historical record is that for years, Israel concealed its, quote, hidden hand in the proxy war while feigning merely humanitarian aid. Sound familiar? Goes on to say, something now fully admitted by Israel's top military commander. In other words, the humanitarian smokescreen was cover for a full-on covert war on Damascus, as we and many other independent outlets have reported many, many times, and for years now. Yet another, this is, and we continue to point this out numerous times, yet another past conspiracy theory becomes today's just undeniable fact. And this is something we have to continue to think about in the context of all the other things we're hearing today. Oh, you crazy conspiracy theory. That conspiracy theorist, you're so crazy. This is all lies. Didn't you hear? Iran's the bad guy. And then as we go forward and look back 20 years, we find out, oh, it looks like those crazy conspiracy theorists were right. How many times must this happen until we begin to see that we're being lied to by the people that pretend to have our best interests in mind? Now, on another side note, kind of a second follow-up to something I talked about a couple shows ago. Now, this is again about Tulsi Gabbard, and somebody shared something with me. Now, I want to be clear, first of all, that I have and continue to support Tulsi's really, really fantastic actions in numerous ways in regard to pointing out that there are no moderate rebels, in speaking out about what's going on in Yemen, and fighting for all of these fantastic things. But as I pointed out on Adam's show and other places, it's not the first time that politicians have been very savvy, such as Trump, in using things that they can tell that the kind of largely growing anti-establishment mentality in this country want to hear in order to, you know, propel a political career. Now, I'm not saying that's the truth. Who ultimately knows? Maybe Tulsi Gabbard will run and become president and change the world. Who ultimately knows? Despite the fact that one person's never going to change this broken system, I can't say I know that for sure. But the point is that there are examples that we can't ignore, regardless of how much we want her to be the person that she seems to be, that we have to look at. Now, here's a tweet that was shared with me in regard to the same vein of thought that I've been pointing out, coming from Johnny, it appears, is beware. Tulsi Gabbard is on the payroll of Jewish mobster Sheldon Adelson. She also spoke at the Christians United for Israel summit alongside another organized crime figure, Bibi Netanyahu, who stole nuclear technology from the United States. Now, you can argue with his labels for these people, but the other parts are facts. Absolutely stole nuclear information from the U.S. This is documented fact. Sheldon Adelson, who is aggressively pro-Israel, who says that all he wants to do is be a good Zionist and promote Israel, who is now also the largest funder of Republican candidates in this country, and a massive political donor in general, and a huge funder of Donald Trump himself, is now basically, there's connections here we can't ignore. Now, he credits the name there you can see for the research, but here's the images that he goes on to show in this tweet. And it's important to be open-minded about this stuff. Now, first, the writing, Republican mega donor Sheldon Adelson is making a renewed push to ban online gambling after it failed last year. Reps Jason Chaffetz and Utah Republican and Tulsi Gabbard, a Hawaiian Democrat, introduced an Adelson-backed bill. Now, that in of itself doesn't mean that there's a nefarious connection, but it shows a connection nonetheless. And then it goes on to point out the bill itself and the reality that it's another thing funded by Sheldon Adelson. Now, as you move forward, it begins to get more interesting when you realize that she's been a speaker at places such as the Christians United for Israel Foundation, something that Nathan recently did a show about, which is very important. And there's a lot of politicians here involved in these speaking. Look, you can see plenty of them right there. And these people, numerous times have stood up and openly said that there is nothing more important than their relationship with Israel. Now, that's a very damning thing to hear from an American politician, seeing as how you should assume that, you know, their constituents and the American people would be the most important thing to them. But that statement directly contradicts that. Now, she's someone that's been speaking at these groups, which shows you that there possibly could be a bias towards Israel, despite what she may have said in the past. This is one that I found myself from the Christians United for Israel's own Facebook page, showing her speaking there and the connection therein. Now, does this in and of itself mean that she's a problem? No, it doesn't. But we can't ignore the dangerous connections here. Now, here's the last thing they shared on this tweet, which a tweet from her saying Al-Qaeda attacked us on 9/11 and must be defeated. Obama won't bomb them. Syria, Putin did. Never forget 9/11. Basically just showing you the perpetuation of the lies. The lies about Al-Qaeda, how someone like her can point out that the U.S. is supporting Al-Qaeda, and yet then still pretend that Al-Qaeda attacked us on 9/11, despite all the evidence that I know that all these people can see. Very easily researchable stuff. But that being said, none of this is ultimately proof of anything, but it's something that we should be considering. That this person is the next person set up to be the anti-establishment candidate. But yet again, that being said, I will continue to cheer her forward when she does good things. And I'm not going to start off by saying that I will absolutely not support someone like this and be speaking against her just because of these things. I will watch as it develops And if she continues to do good things, I will continue to support her. But these things should be weighing on your mind, as any intelligent, critically thinking person today should be, considering all that we've seen come to pass in this country in the very recent past and long before that. Now, moving on to the next story in a similar vein of thought in regard to Israel and our own Congress, this is something that's going to be alarming to a lot of people based on just what we've recently covered in regard to the anti-BDS bill being voted on three times in a short period of time. And on the other side, we have the House pushing forward a bill to force Donald Trump to create an anti-Semitism envoy and raising it to ambassador, which is pretty alarming. All of this happening right in the beginning when when Americans care about a lot more important things. Many of them, interesting, the wall for one, which, you know, I don't, that's not something I feel is most important, but many Americans do. And yet they're still pushing forward a lot of this stuff about Israel right in the beginning. And here's another one coming from Mint Press News. Texas congressman with ties to controversial donor introduces $38 billion Israel aid bill. This is another new bill. Another one focused on Israel aid spending. This is unbelievable. It's shocking to me that this continues to move forward, showing that these congressmen and women do, at the very least, put Israel's needs above that of the American people. It's kind of alarming, and it really should be. Now, on January 8th, Republican Congressman Michael T. McCaul of Texas introduced H.R. 336, reported to be a companion bill to S1, the one we've been covering, the Senate bill that would cement the $38 billion package to Israel, combat the movement to pressure Israel to adhere to international law known as BDS, and other measures. Now, the text of his bill is not yet publicly available, interestingly enough, since McCaul has not published it on his congressional website, even though it was put forward on the 8th. He hasn't issued a press release about it or informed his regional offices about the bill. I wonder why. Now, the congressional website also does not yet contain a summary or text almost a week after the bill was introduced. That's very interesting. Maybe because he doesn't want people to pay attention to this. Now, McCaul has a long record of supporting Israel and has received $90,000 from pro-Israel political action committees that give to both Republicans and Democrats, which is important to always point out. This is a bipartisan thing that has influenced all of our congression, all of our politics in this country. Now, in 2018, he was endorsed by Citizens Organized, a pro-Israel PAC located in Los Angeles. Most of its contributors are from Beverly Hills, and as well as NORPAC, headquartered in New Jersey, which says that it is the largest pro-Israel advocacy organization in the country, being funded by all these people. So you wonder, it's pretty clear why this is so important to him. Now, other co-sponsors of the bill are Patrick T. McHenry, Republican, and Will Hurd, another Republican. Now, both also have strong pro-Israel records. McHenry himself has received over $102,000 from pro-Israel PACs. Now, the full title of the current bill is, interestingly enough, quote, H.R. 336, to make improvements to certain defenses and security assistance provisions and to authorize the appropriation of funds to Israel, to reauthorize the United States-Jordan Defense Cooperation Act of 2015, and to halt the wholesale slaughter of the Syrian people and for other purposes, end quote. Interesting title, but clearly this doesn't even seem to have really formulated yet. But it's interesting that this is something that they're not letting out for people to look at. And this is driving heavily in the direction of more funding for Israel, more support for Israel, and making BDS illegal. Another bill. Now, you have to ask yourself, with everything going on in this country, why? Now, this is important to recognize. Regardless of your stance on Israel, it's interesting how people will call us racist for simply discussing political points of Israel, which is inherently the opposite of racism. Thank you for the super chat. We're discussing politics here, not race. But it's interesting to point out that even if you're pro-Israel, you have to recognize the danger of putting another country before the interests of the American people. You have to recognize that, how that is dangerous. And of course, while they're screaming about Russiagate, there's something going on here that people are they're intentionally ignoring. Now, in related news in this entire discussion, coming from anti-media, I found this one to be very interesting as well, showing you that this is getting a little out of hand. Apparently, Israel's about to deport Human Rights Watch director for supporting BDS, the director of the Human Rights Watch. regardless of your stance on that group, I have plenty of negative things to say about them, but he is a supporter of BDS, and they're about to deport him from the country for it. It's a humanitarian organization, the director of it. I mean, this is actually pretty interesting. Now, Israel is actually about to deport him, the director of Human Rights Watch's regional office. His name is Omar Shakir, for, quote, promoting the boycott of Israel for many years, and since joining the Human Rights Organization, he continued to call for boycott Israel and is on his personal Twitter account. Think about that. So this man, who is out there working for Human Rights Watch, regardless of your thoughts on that group, maybe with genuine intent to do good in the world, on his personal Twitter account, discussing his constitutional right, he is an American, to boycott what he pleases on his personal account. And because of that, Israel is about to deport him from the country. Really shows you that this is something they're worried about. And when they continue to call BDS a terrorist organization, ask yourself, does that mean the director of Human Rights Watch, are they claiming he's a terrorist? Interesting. Hopefully you can discern what I'm getting at here and, you know, dive further for yourself. Now, moving on to some other news in regard to Yemen that I think is very important. And again, to point out the lies, the absolute disgusting, easily verifiable lies of the U.S. government today in regard to Yemen, as well as Iran and the Middle East in general. But this is specifically about Yemen. Coming from Mint Press News as well, Yemen's Houthis refute Pompeo's accusations of Hodeidah truce violations. This is laughable. It's laughable, first of all, how stupid they think you are. That they will literally stand up and say that the Houthis are violating this, while basically everybody but the Western media is pointing out how the Saudis have yet to actually stop firing. They have actually not even at once stepped down for this truce has supposedly taken place. The Houthis have verified by the United Nations, continued to stand down, continued to redeploy further away in good faith, and the Saudis just continue to fire on civilians. And he has the nerve, this absolute sociopath or someone who's just completely disconnected from reality, Pompeo, stands up and says that the Houthis are violating this. This is them, like I continue to point out, rewriting history in real time. They are trying to tell you what's happening in hopes that you're just too stupid to look at this everywhere else and say, well, I'm just going to listen to what my government says. Despite it being your obligation as an American to actually question what they tell you. You know, quintessentially American to do so. So Mohammed Ali al-Houthi, the head of Yemen's Supreme Revolutionary Committee, has said that the Houthis' withdrawal from Hodeidah refuted recent allegations made by U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo. Tweeting, quote, Pompeo's accusations are refuted by the steps of redeployment at the port of Hodeidah and the submission of positive proposals. Now remember, the United Nations themselves have verified that the Houthis have indeed moved away from Hodeidah. That's what they're saying there, that their movements directly refute any ridiculous claims that they're the ones violating the ceasefire. As well as the fact that by all accounts, the Saudis have at least violated the truce like 1,000 times. I've seen 800, I've also seen over 2,000, depending on who you're listening to. But the takeaway is they violated the truce repeatedly. And this is something even they will admit to in their own statements. They'll just continue to say, well, the Houthis are not adhering to it, so we're going to keep firing. Except that the UN has verified that they have. Now, the comment from the Houthis' senior most official comes in response to the statement by Pompeo that Houthi fighters are actually currently violating the UN brokered ceasefire in Hodeidah. Now, al-Houthi went on to criticize Washington's support for Saudi Arabia's war in Yemen, backed 100% by the United States. Now, in addition to this, on a side note, I recommend you check out my recent interview with Hussein al-Bukhaidi, who is on the ground in Yemen, you know, an actual source, unlike the mainstream media, reporting exactly what we're talking about, that this is a fake ceasefire. They're using this, as they always do, to gain territory, to use the feigned idea of a ceasefire to move in further and attack more. And of course, they're direct sponsors of terrorism, as you can see in that picture. That's literally the advisor to the U.S.-backed Hadi government that they claim is the legitimate government of Yemen, even though they were put there illegally by the U.S. years ago and forced out by the people. That's literally Hadi's advisor shaking the hands in Geneva while he is currently on the list of U.S. a U.S. list of backers of terrorism. You can't make this stuff up. Maybe the U.S. should be smart enough to, you know, censor their list before they allow this man to go to Geneva. It's ridiculous. And they're backing these people. But for those that may ask, you know, why should I trust Hussein al-Bukhari? Why should I believe him? It's important to understand that this is just an average civilian. This is not he wasn't a journalist before this. He is an average Yemeni civilian who decided to start covering what's really going on after seeing the absolute decimation of his country by terrorist forces. And so he decided to start covering what's going on. He has absolutely no incentive to lie. Could he be lying? Of course, anybody could be lying. But he has no incentive to lie. He's actually risking his life on a daily basis to go out and do this. There's no money being made here. He's simply trying to save the lives of Yemeni people. So you can ask yourself, who's got the motive to lie here? But, you know, question everything, as always. But please check out this interview because it's some important information that you're going to want to look at. But moving on with the story itself, speaking in Riyadh on Monday, in Saudi Arabia, Pompeo's little tour of lies. He lied about Iran, lied about Middle East policy, literally absurdly called the U.S. a force for good in the Middle East, despite the obvious track record of countries in complete annihilation after their liberation. But Pompeo, on Monday, claimed that the Houthis had chosen not to comply with the Hodeidah truce, literally claiming that the Houthis were the ones not complying as the Saudis were currently bombing and killing civilians. He said, quote, "The work that was done in Sweden on Yemen was good, but both sides need to honor those commitments." He said this after talks with, of course, the Saudi King Salman and Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman. You know, the one who openly said that they're going to continue to bomb children so in hopes that Yemenis shiver when they hear the name Saudi Arabia on record. And he said, quote, "To date, the Houthis have chosen not to do that." Now, the Houthis boycotted a meeting chaired by the head of a UN-led ceasefire monitoring team in Hodeidah, accusing the head of the team of pursuing a Saudi coalition agenda. As I've continued to point out, it seems the UN is clearly taking a side here. Now, a source inside the negotiating committee, who spoke with Mint Press News, said that retired Dutch Major General Patrick Cammaert, who is leading the UN Joint Committee tasked with overseeing a truce in Western Yemen, requested that Houthi forces withdraw 8 kilometers outside of Hodeidah. That's what the UN is. They requested the Houthis go 8 kilometers outside while asking the Saudi coalition only to withdraw 0.5 kilometer, which, by the way, they haven't done, given the coalition, the U.S.-backed coalition, an open opportunity to quickly occupy Hodeidah, unopposed. Now, according to the UN, the fragile ceasefire was largely held since it came into force in December. But there have been delays in the agreed-upon withdrawal of the Houthis and Saudi-led coalition forces. The reason the ceasefire has held together, at least as it has, because the Houthis have continued to try to make it happen. But as we've continued to point out, and as you can see with the smallest amount of research, the moment this truce went into effect, the Saudis were still continuing to bomb, and they still continue to bomb to this very day. Both airstrikes, shelling, and everything else they've continued to do. It has not stopped. It's right there for anyone to look at. Now, if you remember, this was my concern from the very beginning, that the U.S.-backed Saudi coalition would use this in order to take Hodeidah, which is a very important point. And, you know, clearly they're trying to, we can see it. And they have the UN and the whole of the Western media on their side. Because there's a blackout at the moment. They're not discussing what's happening. They're not discussing that the Saudis have continued to bomb these areas well past the point. Now, to take another step on this discussion, on an interesting level that we haven't really dove into, but it shows you just how important these areas are. Also coming from Mint Press News, it talks about the oil in Yemen and how apparently the Saudis are now trying to manipulate politically in order to take control of this. Hoping for control over its oil, Saudi Arabia is trying to hijack Yemen's parliament. Very interesting. Now, this is something that we've talked about kind of generally in their agendas around these countries, taking their resources. But this is something that we have yet to actually dive into on this show about Saudi's agenda in regard to Yemen. And it's very important because this ties into what I've been talking about in regard to the port, the Bab al-Mandeb Strait, port of Hodeidah, and the Strait of Hormuz on the other side. Now, hoping to secure control of Yemen's oil-rich provinces, very important to think about. Saudi Arabia is now attempting to circumvent Yemen's legitimate parliament by holding its own parliament sessions outside of Yemen's capital. Saudi Arabia hopes the move, which will see a separate Saudi-backed Yemeni parliament meeting in Saudi-controlled areas of Yemen, or actually in Saudi Arabia itself in early 2019, their hope is that it will force a moratorium on Yemen's domestic energy development, basically meaning just stop them from drilling for their own oil. And this is as the Saudis hope to secure control of Yemen's substantial oil reserves for themselves. Clearly, this doesn't have to do with fighting terrorism or installing the legitimate government. They're trying to sneak in and steal their resources in the process. Now, a Yemeni parliamentarian told Mint Press News that Saudi Arabia gathered the U.S.-backed former Yemeni President Hadi, who was put in place illegally by the United States, as so many other countries we've seen, with also members of the House of Representatives currently on house arrest in the Saudi capital of Riyadh in late December. In house arrest. Those members of Yemeni's parliament were actually detained and put on house arrest after being invited to visit Saudi Arabia. Kind of sounds like the Khashoggi thing, doesn't it? Yeah, sure, come on over. We'll invite you over. We can check things out. We can have a discussion. And then they arrest them. Good to see that the U.S. is supporting these kind of people. Now, the source added that Saudi Arabia will force the members of parliament, force them, to hold a council session in an area of Yemen under Saudi control, which is Aden, I believe, is what they're discussing, away from the Yemeni parliament's original headquarters in Sana'a, when the arrangements are completed, of course. Now, according to the source, the first session is important, as a new council speaker will be elected, replacing the legitimately elected current speaker. The speaker is still presiding over the council sessions in Sana'a, along with deputies who refused to support the Saudi-led coalition and to give it legal cover for its occupation, which is what they're trying to accomplish here. Now, Yemen's parliament, based in Sana'a, refused the Saudi plans, saying in a December 15th statement to the U.S. Congress that Yemen's parliament and its lawmakers in Sana'a are the sole representatives of the Yemeni people, according to the Yemeni constitution, and that whoever impersonates parliament is breaking the law, adding that lawmakers who join the Saudi coalition are no longer have status in Yemeni's parliament. Now, this is what the Yemeni people back. And they're now saying, and they're rightly saying, that if they create some faux parliament in another part of the country controlled by the Saudis in an effort to subvert what the people want, again, think about what's happening here in this country in Israel, very similar, that's breaking the law. And it is. But you won't hear anything about this from the mainstream media. You won't hear anything about this from the United States because they're all involved in trying to make this happen. And in order to make this like really very thin veneer of legitimacy, well, we have our own Congress set up. And now they're going to probably call this the legitimate Congress, even though the people do not support it. Now, we're going to discuss more about this in regard to Honduras as we come to an end to the show today. So stay tuned in regard to the U.S. foreign policy and how they do this regularly around the world. Now, while Western media outlets usually refer to Yemen as a, quote, small energy producer, the country is actually sitting on a substantial oil and gas reserves, which Saudi Arabia and its allies have actually long sought to control, which is a huge factor for what they're trying to do here. Now, Saudi Arabia is also seeking to obtain legal cover from its own session of Yemen's parliament to build a port and construct a pipeline in the Al-Mara province in Yemen, which would allow the kingdom to get to transport oil directly to the Arabian Sea, bypassing the turbulent Strait of Hormuz and the Bab el-Mandeb Strait. Now, what have we been saying all along? That the entire point of trying to take Hodeidah was in fear that Iran would shut down the Strait of Hormuz and they would need to shuttle the oil out of there, their illegal oil reserves they're stealing from Yemen, as well as the ones they have the rights to other places, if you believe that. But the point is that they need somewhere to move the oil. But now what we're seeing is they're trying to subvert the parliament of Yemen in order to actually steal the ability to create a pipeline and a port to bypass both of them. Now, think about that. That, in my eyes, completely confirms our concerns about why they're doing this. Has nothing to do with government, has nothing to do with the Houthis rebels or Iran. Well, it has to do with Iran for Israel and the United States. But in regard to Saudi Arabia, this has to do with taking control of Yemen for the oil, as we've seen so many other times. And now they're literally doing it right in front of us. And guess who's going to support it? Israel, and the United States. Moving on to the final story of the day, in regard to Honduras and so many other things that we're going to touch on here. But this is again, getting into the idea of the caravan, which is kind of coming back up again, which is important to recognize that this is needed for a political reason to carry out the agenda that we're seeing the battle between the government shutdown. Now, this is an article from Zero Hedge entitled "Trump Warns of New Migrant Caravan Leaving Honduras." Now, the article actually begins by saying, as the battle over President Trump's border wall drags on for its fourth week, President Trump is warning about a new migrant caravan forming in Honduras and will soon be on its way to the southern border. And before I get into the points here, I'm not trying to argue there. I know there are people that support the wall. You know my opinions on it. You can watch my past videos. I do acknowledge there's an issue there. Our immigration policy in this country is absolutely absurd. But the point here is I'm not even trying to get into the discussion of whether or not the wall is legitimate or whether or not this or that or the left versus right constant battle. It's not what we're getting into here today. I want to discuss for a moment why this is happening. Aside from any genuine concerns about people actually creating this, as we saw last time with people paying them and all and so on, even that aside, I want to discuss the legitimate historical facts of why there is destabilization and why there are refugees and migrants coming from Honduras and other places in South America. Now, virtually all of the Latin American governments that the United States has successfully overthrown over the past 65 years were actually democratically elected. That's a fact. Among those many democratically elected leaders that have been ousted illegally by the United States were Jacobo Arbenz in Guatemala, Salvador Allende in Chile, Jean Bertrand Aristide. I've pronounced his name correctly before. Anyway, I'm sure somebody will correct me. In Haiti, Jean Bertrand in Haiti, and Manuel Zelaya in Honduras in 2009. Now, Washington targeted all these leaders with economic sanctions and destabilization campaigns that created the economic chaos and the humanitarian crises required to justify a military solution. This is U.S. Foreign Policy 101. Economic chaos and humanitarian crisis. Now think about that in regard to why this stuff is happening. And now we pretend that this rise in refugees and migrants is just some random happening. But there's clearly a hand in this from the United States. Now in the 20th century, the U.S. military was sent to Honduras 7 different times to support multinational corporations, the United Fruit Company, and the Standard Fruit Company, to crush strikes and keep the money flowing. Interesting how the U.S. military is used to shut down strikes and support international fruit companies. Ask yourself if that's what you think the military should be used for. 7 different times in the 20th century, the U.S. military has laid boots on the ground in Honduras for these kind of reasons. Now, the truth is that the United States government has never allowed independent governments in Latin America. Every time people elect a government that represents them, good or bad, but that represents the people, instead of U.S. economic interest, Washington overthrows the elected government, or tries to. Now, Marine General Smedley Butler told us this, as have many others. Legitimate sources saying this is what they're trying to accomplish, as has their own documentation many times over. Now, currently, Washington is trying to overthrow the governments of Venezuela and Nicaragua and has bought off the Ecuadorian government with oil purchases and the usual personal bribes. Evo Morales, the government of Evo Morales in Bolivia, is also targeted by Washington. Now, the Obama administration actually succeeded in removing the reform governments of Honduras, Argentina, and Brazil. And of course, these policies have continued and in most cases increased under Donald Trump. Now, regardless of your stance on the wall or immigration in general, if you cannot first acknowledge the massive role the U.S. has played in creating the current situation, you are simply being willfully ignorant of the reality. But we must be able to see that this situation, real, fabricated, or otherwise, is most definitely being used for a political agenda. So we should ask ourselves, with all this info at hand, is this just all part of the plan? Now, hopefully people, even who support these things, can stand back and ask themselves that very, very legitimate, logical question. Thank you all for tuning in today. I appreciate you being here. Please, if this resonates with you, spread the information. Get this out there for people. For those that are tuned in at the moment, please stay tuned, following for a short T-Lab research and review, a little Q&A we can continue to discuss further. Stay right on this channel. We will continue the discussion. And if you'd like to support this channel, there's many ways you can do so. We recently signed up for bitbacker.io, search for The Last American Vagabond, basically a Patreon for cryptocurrency. You can support this channel by going to the link in the show notes and buy yourself a Question Everything t-shirt. Or if you'd like to buy something else from the store, just enter Vagabond in the code to make sure you support The Last American Vagabond as well. Or just support us on Patreon or PayPal or wherever else. Or as I always point out, just share the video. Get the information out there. Wake people up. Very important to do so. Now, I know simply just discussing these immigration topics or the wall get people so emotionally outraged. Now, remember, I'm not trying to argue good or bad in those policies. I'm just simply trying to point out that as they point to this caravan as a problem, recognize that the U.S.'s own policy, at least in part, is responsible for why it's happening. Think about that. I love you all. As always, question everything. Come to your own conclusions. Stay vigilant.